ओम गणेश जन जन सलकय चक्षुस्मृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदमयं ददति स पुनरन्तिकम्. In the Bhagavatam, in the 19th chapter of the first canto, the description is very sober of Maharaj Prakrits having renounced his kingdom due to the fact that he knew his death was approaching. So when we're dying and this very difficult time will stare each of us in the face at some point in our life, at this difficult time, one naturally becomes frightened, as Ajamil also became frightened when his death approached. And one takes shelter of that which one is attached to. It's just natural. And one's training in life, or one could say one's whole life, is really meant to build up the proper attachments, so that at the time, when the time comes, when the soul will leave the body, that we hold on tightly to the correct thing, the real shelter. So Maharaj Prakrit sat down at the bank of the Ganga, or the Yamuna, and he had renounced his kingdom. He renounced everything, and it's easy to be renounced when you don't have anything, but Maharaj Prakrit possessed the entire earth, practically speaking, with its armies, with its wealth. And he renounced it all, his family. And he sat down at the bank of the river, and he had decided to fast until death. Now, we know what happens quite soon. Srila Sukadeva Goswami appears. He comes there, inspired by Krishna, from within the heart. And indeed, this is the deepest desire of a devotee, is that somehow or another he be instrumental in fulfilling Krishna's desires. This is the natural position of the soul. And we search throughout the universe for those things that will satisfy us. But it is to no avail until we come to the point, Bhagyavan Jeev. When the jiva becomes fortunate, then he gets the seed of devotion and he develops his relationship with Krishna. And when our attempt is only to satisfy Krishna, then we become satisfied ourselves. And the independent search for satisfaction just brings us frustration. It's like trying to eat a feast when you're so hungry, but eating the mirror reflection of the feast. But to get to reality, to the actual reality, our relationship with Krishna, is not an easy thing, because we have such a long-standing habit of considering ourselves the enjoyer and the center, and seeing the material world, the elements of the material world, as separate from Krishna and is meant for our own personal pleasure and enjoyment. So it's such a difficult thing to get beyond. And Maya, Dratyaya, it is empowered, Daivyesha Gunamayi. It's empowered by Krishna to present, to bewilder us, basically, like a magic spell put upon us, bewildering us. and causing us to think that I am the center and my vision is reality, and if everyone could see the things that I saw, everyone would completely agree with me. But reality is actually only known by Krishna. And the little piece that we get from our point of view, our tiny point of view, is part of reality. And if you notice, everyone sees things completely differently. We see part of reality. And when we consider the part as the whole, that is illusion. So we have our long-standing habit of placing ourselves in the center, and the process of bhakti, as we know, is meant to, so that we turn our face to Krishna. Now, Maharaj Prakrit sat down, and Sukadeva Goswami came, and he and Maharaj Prakrit asked him his question. And a little bit later, we will go back and hear something that happened before the appearance of Maharaj Prakrit, before Sukadeva Goswami, before Maharaj Prakrit in his presence. But he asked him his question: What should I do now? I'm going to die in 7 days. What should I do? How should I spend these last days of my life? But actually, he already knew the answer to that question. And Krishna had sent Sukadeva Goswami, inspired him from within his heart, because he had heard from his exalted, most exalted, empowered father, Srila Vyasadeva. He had heard the Bhagavatam. He was a devotee. He was Vishnu Jana. He was dear to the devotees because he was a devotee. Previously, he was an impersonalist. And as a devotee, he was dear to the devotees. So Krishna inspired him to come, and he spoke the Bhagavatam, the first canto, the second canto, the third canto, and the fourth canto, and the fifth canto, and the sixth canto, and the seventh canto, and the eighth canto, and the ninth canto. And then he opened up before the eyes, or actually the ears, and the pure consciousness of Maharaj Prakrit. Step by step, he provided all the conceptions and all the leelas and all the philosophy that would open up the heart of Maharaj Prakrit, whose heart was already opened because he already had told the brahmanas, as we'll get to towards the end, that I want to hear about Krishna. Let the curse come. Let the curse of the Brahmin boy, of the snake, let it come. Let whatever happens, happen. But I just want to fill my ears, which means fill my consciousness with Krishna, Krishna consciousness. So in the 10th canto, Srila Sukadeva Goswami opened up Krishna's Brajalila. And then he opened up, or rather we could say, and it happens in such an amazing way, in the 37th chapter of the 10th canto, when Narada Muni has the service of informing Krishna that now it is the time for you to close your Vrindavan Leela. And he tells him a little indirectly this point by saying, soon I will see you do this, soon I will see you do that, I will see you kill this demon, I will see you marry 16,108 queens, you'll perform this heroic activity. But none of these pastimes are taking place in Vrindavan. And then Krishna, he leaves Vrindavan. Now we won't speak about that pastime, about Krishna's leaving Vrindavan, how Akrura comes, and how the residents of Vrindavan become thrust into an ocean of where is Krishna, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching us the methodology of finding Krishna. And the primary element of finding Krishna is searching for him. We have to want, that desire must be in the heart. A different taste than the taste of trying to enjoy the material world. It has to come to the heart. And that's our process of Krishna consciousness, pushing behind us this long-standing habit of trying to enjoy the material world, seeing the material world as for our enjoyment, even seeing Krishna's dham as for our enjoyment. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took his parikrama here, we have read, to all around Vrindavan, he wouldn't let the parikramis cut the trees to use as toothbrushes, because he wanted to make the impression upon them that this land, these trees, are not meant for you. Vrindavan is not meant for you, for your pleasure. It is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So the resonance of Vrindavan was thrust into an ocean of where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? There was no question of material attachment, because their consciousness was aflame, like Mahaprabhu's consciousness was aflame. It was flaming, it was blazing. Where is Krishna? And in that consciousness that is so focused on where is Krishna, but not so I can enjoy him. Sometimes we hear the residents of Vrindavan wandering around Vrindavan, Radhe Sham, Sham Malade, Radhe Radhe Sham, give me Sham, this, as if this is Radharani's service, to give me Sham, and as if I'm supposed to be able to give pleasure to Krishna, and I'm supposed to give Radharani should give some to me so I can give pleasure to Krishna. So the devotee's mood, we have learned, is. I even saw one time, I was invited to visit one of the a family, and they had a Rasa Leela going on, presentation, a drama presentation in their home, but it was Radha and Krishna were sitting on a throne, and for Krishna's pleasure, they asked the gopis to perform a drama. And these dramas were of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. This is in the Rasa Leela presentation, or the presentation. And then they were Radha and Krishna. So you see Radha and Krishna sitting on the throne was so pleased that they said, "We will give you whatever you want." And then as Radha and Krishna were sitting on the throne, all the gopis said, "We want Sham." And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, Gopi Bhakti Parakamala Dasa Dasa Na Dasa Na Dasa Na Dasa Na Dasa. Because who can give Krishna more pleasure? Me? So it takes so much to pull us to the point of right desire. And in the introduction to the two classes I was giving, the first part was on intention. Excuse me, it was on consciousness. And that consciousness should change. The conclusion was the consciousness should change from being the seer, I want to see, to being seen. And what does Krishna see? And the second part of this presentation is on intention, which means desire. And that is what I wish to speak about. And I will soon begin telling you an amazing pastime that takes place a little later in the Bhagavatam, but let me just get to that point. So the residents of Vrindavan are thrust into an ocean of missing Krishna. Where is Krishna? Their life doesn't exist without. They were used to seeing him continuously. It was like being brought up in a village like that. The Vrindavan villages was like living in the same house with Krishna. And this is the special consciousness that the residents of Vrindavan have. It's called mamata. There is prema, but it's in the mood of mamata. Or what does mamata mean? Mine. It's especially he's mine. He's from the same village. He's our Krishna. This is the special mood of the residents of Vrindavan that gives Krishna pleasure, because they don't see him as the Supreme Lord. They know that he's full of all opulence and Aishwarya. They know that. But that thought doesn't enter their consciousness. And when it enters for some time, it gets pushed to the bottom again by the strength of the sweetness of their attachment in mamata and their love for him. And their single-pointed desire to act according to who they are for his pleasure. It is only him that is in the center of their life. He is Lila Purushottama. He is the center of all the Leelas. And then he is acting in such a way that increases the ecstasy of everyone. So then Krishna goes to Mathura, and then he goes to Dwarka, and he performs so many activities. And then in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, the Uddhava, Krishna speaks to Uddhava because it is time for Krishna's departure from this universe. And then the 11th canto ends by describing Krishna's departure. Maharaj Prickett has heard this. And soon it is time for his own departure. So in the first chapter of the 12th canto, there Sukadeva describes the succession of kings in Kali Yuga, one after the next, after the next, after the next, similar to the 9th canto of the Bhagavatam. One after the next, after the next, after the next. And Maharaj Prickett is a king. And he's waiting for his turn. That's the actual situation. Succession of kings, succession of lineages. Here we are, we're sitting, and there's young people here, and there's the elderly here, and the elderly gradually get cleared away, and the middle-aged gradually take their place as the elderly, and they get cleared away, and the young move up. Everyone has their turn to act in this world, and then they get cleared away, making for the next generation. So the succession of kings is described by Sukadeva, because he wants complete detachment from the realm of matter to develop in the heart of Prickett Maharaj, because we don't want, he didn't want, and we don't want any glimmers of, I need this, and only if that didn't happen, and I only, and I, oh, this one and this one. And he didn't want anything to remain so that he could fully focus his consciousness on Krishna. Full absorption in Krishna. that which the residents of Vrindavan, each and every single one of them, from the blades of grass to the Brajagopikas of Varsana, of Yavat, they were fully and only absorbed in Krishna, so much so that while they were swimming in the ocean of separation from Krishna, they weren't even aware of their own self. We talk about Madarpanam, or the giving of the self to Krishna. This is so wonderful, Sharanagati, the giving of the self to Krishna. But the gopis were on such a different platform, they weren't even conscious of their own selves to give to Krishna. They were only conscious of Krishna. In the second chapter, Sukadev continues this point of detachment by explaining what is going to happen soon. And that is Kali Yuga is going to manifest. And he describes Kali Yuga. And it's horrible. And we're seeing it starting to manifest. Starting to manifest. And it's horrible. More detachment. Get out now. You think you're unfortunate. But of course, Maharaj Prickett wasn't thinking himself unfortunate at all. Get out now. Then he describes in the next chapter the Bhumi Gita, about the different Bhumis lamenting the consciousness of kings who are trying to exploit this world and how foolish it is. Then something else, and then, amazingly enough, in the sixth chapter of the 12th canto, Maharaj Prickett actually departs. But in the fifth chapter, Sukadev explains what is he going to tell him right before it's time for him to leave. Is he going to revisit in his consciousness, bring to the forefront of his consciousness the dust of Vrindavan and the residents of Vrindavan? And Krishna? No. Amazingly, he speaks Gyan. He speaks Gyan. And in the sixth chapter, when it's time for Prickett, it's just at that time, practically speaking, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that he's speaking this gyan, and Prickett Maharaj gets angry. Sukadev Goswami. He's not angry, but he's repulsed. Why are you speaking this? He's covering bhakti on one level, because bhakti is very, very secret. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to actually understand. It's so simple, but because my consciousness is so crooked, it's difficult to understand. So he covers it. But also, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that he's so happy, Srila Sukadev Goswami is so happy by Maharaj Prickett's anger and not wanting this. And then Sukadev asks, is there anything else you'd like to hear about? And Maharaj Prickett says, no. He then worships Sukadev Goswami. He worships him. He thanks him for filling his consciousness with Krishna. And he worships him. And this is just right before Maharaj Prickett leaves this world. He worships Sukadeva Goswami. And then Sukadeva Goswami, pleased with Maharaj Prakrit, stands up and leaves. This is just minutes before Maharaj Prakrit's going to die. And he spent all this time pouring the nectar of Krishna Katha into his ears. And then at that exact moment, practically speaking, he stands up and he walks away. Most astonishing. And then he asked permission. Excuse me, before this, Maharaj Prakrit asked permission from him. I've heard enough. Now I know exactly what has to be done. So please give me the blessing that I can take my words, my thoughts, my mind, and all my senses and keep them inward, fully absorbed in thoughts of Adhokshaja, of Hari, of Lord Krishna. And Sukadeva gives his blessings, they worship him, and he leaves. Then Maharaj Prakrit, having heard about Krishna, closes his eyes and sits down in yogic meditation. And he focuses his mind fully on his beloved Krishna, who had saved him, who had saved him in the womb. Krishna had personally come to save him in the womb, Vishnu Arti. He was saved by the Lord from the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama. And focused fully on Krishna, he leaves this world. The soul departs and his body remains there. And then the snake bird comes and bites him. And his body is ignited by the power of the snake bird's poison and flames. And it is burnt to ashes. Our acharyas comment that the snake bird is acting like the eldest son who burns the body of the departed father, because Prakrit Maharaj had already left. But that is not the end of the Bhagavatam. Maharaj Prakrit, having 7 days to live and having renounced the kingdom, sat down to fast, and all great sages and Brahmins came to be with him at this time. And he begged them, and we'll hear more about the blessing that he begged in a few moments. But he begged them to allow him to focus his consciousness on Lord Hari. And then he had done that. And he left. And again, the Bhagavatam didn't end at that time. So then Sutta Goswami, who is speaking to the sages of Namasharanya, he begins to continue to wind down the end of the Bhagavatam. There are 13 chapters, and this happens in the 6th chapter. And then the sages ask about all the Puranic literatures. And one by one, he explains how the Vedic literatures, and the similar to the description, but in more detail in the first canto, about who spoke what Veda and the Puranas, and how everything was expanded. And then in the 7th chapter, he mentions Markandeya Purana. And the sages of Namasharanya, they don't want the Bhagavatam to end. They are so enraptured by hearing about the past sages of different varieties. Their consciousness was so sweetened by the Bhagavatam, they didn't want it to end. So they asked to tell about Markandeya Rishi. And Markandeya Rishi was so famous because he was the most long-lived of all sages. He lived for more than a billion years. He lived past the devastation, the partial devastation of the universe that occurs after the end of Lord Brahma's day. He lived through that. And they wanted to hear about him. Oh, that was the chapter that I missed talking about. The fifth chapter when Sukadeva Goswami describes all the different annihilations. All to bring this detachment to the heart of Sukadeva. So they ask about Markandeya Rishi. Now, in one sense, this is an odd topic to be talking about in Varsana, at the home of Srimati Radharani. But there is a specific reason that I wish to bring up the pastimes of the topic of Markandeya Rishi. And hopefully it will come out. And it has to do with intention. It has to do with desire. Because as the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita explains, material existence, our life, now, in the past, in the future, is based on our desire. Adishtayam manastayam visha upasevate. Everything is based on our desire, our intentions. And therefore, it is so relevant for us to put ourselves in the proper consciousness where our intentions are right. There is being consciousness, and then there is intention. What is the conscious of who we are, what we are doing? And that was the first part of this presentation. And the second part is, what is the proper intention? When my consciousness is on me, well, what should be at the heart of my consciousness? What should I be desiring? So, Markandeya Rishi was the son of Markandu Rishi, who was a devotee, a great devotee of Lord Shiva, who didn't have a son. So he did tremendous austerities to Lord Shiva to gain a son. And Lord Shiva, being pleased with him, gave him a choice of which kind of son would he want. One that will live very, very long, have great longevity, but would be an impious fool and a rascal, and unintelligent too. And on the other side, he could have a son who would be really pious and pure and very devotional, but he would only live for 16 years. And Markandu chose the son who was going to live for 16 years. The boy was born, his name was Markandeya. And he was so pure. And his father, and he was a devotee of Lord Hari, he was a Vaishnava. So this boy, as he was approaching 16 years and he was worshipping Lord Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yatashambhu, the greatest of Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva, and he was worshipping him in that mood with the big linga that his father was worshipping. As his 16th year was approaching, this Markandeya saw his father and mother crying, and he asked them why, and he explained. The father explained that soon we're going to lose you. This was the benediction of Lord Shiva that has turned into a curse. And Markandeya became frightened. And in his fear, he prayed to Lord Shiva and performed tremendous austerities, just taking shelter. And then finally, when Yamaraj came with his noose, the ropes, he tried to throw them around Markandeya and they looped around the Shiva Lingam. And when he tried to pull the soul from the, then Lord Shiva came to protect his devotee. And he killed Yamaraj. Death itself. And the demigods, don't worry, he'll come back. And the demigods prayed to Lord Shiva to bring him back, and he came back. We thought we were all become death-free by the mercy of Markandeya Rishi. But we already are death-free by the mercy of our being eternal. So Markandeya Rishi got the benediction from Lord Shiva that he would live and live and live and live and live for 2 billion years practically, for 2 days or six manus, 5 or 6 manus, which is 14 manus in a day of Brahma, and there's 4,300,000 times 1,000, and you know, it's one of those. And he was completely pure and in the mode of goodness, and he was a meditator. And he sat in his hermitage for millions of years with a fully focused mind, seeing everything in existence accurately, which means in relationship to Krishna. This is so much of the teachings of the Uddhava Gita and so much of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhumi Rupo Nala Kam, this Bina Prakriti. This is an energy of mind, Krishna says. Nothing in existence is free from its relationship with Krishna. This is the meaning of Krishna being the absolute truth. And Maya's business is to put a curtain in front of reality so we see the material, whatever we see, as if it had no relationship to Krishna. And then by the mercy of Maya, we try to enjoy it. But it's Krishna's. There's one verse one of the later cantos of the Bhagavatam that described the material energy as the body of Lakshmi Devi. And Lakshmi Devi, of course, is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So if the material energy is the body of Lakshmi Devi, and Lakshmi Devi is an expansion of Srimati Radharani, our desire to enjoy the material energy is very inappropriate. So while Markandeya Rishi's consciousness was so pure, so free from anything material, it naturally caused, and his austerities and meditation was so deep, it caused Indra to become fearful. And he sent his army of heavenly, beautiful angels, scarcely dressed, with Kamadev himself there, Cupid with his arrows, to break the meditation of Markandeya Rishi. And Markandeya Rishi's meditation, his mind actually became a little bit shaken, but he controlled it. And Kamadev shot his arrows, and nothing could break his chant. His trance. Now, this is how powerful he was. And then Indra became embarrassed, apologized. And then Naranarayan Rishi came to his hermitage. He was so pleased. The Krishna's form of austerity was so pleased with him. He stood in front of him, or they stood in front of him, and he was so to see God standing in front of you. He was so thrilled. And Narayana Rishi said, "We are so pleased with you. Whatever you want, we will give you. Whatever you want, we will give you." And he said, "Of course, just by seeing you, I'm satisfied. I don't want anything other than that. But there's one thing I would like to see. I want to see your illusory energy itself. I want to see your Maya, Shakti." He was so powerful, he had practically conquered Maya, and he wanted to see Maya. Now, no one explains why he had this desire, but it was in his heart. He wanted to see the illusory energy of the Lord. And Naranarayan Rishi said, what is the way to Tastu? Okay. You want to see something? Okay. So he went back to his meditation. And suddenly, winds came. And then rain came that was as heavy, the drops were as heavy as the wheels of wagons. And the rains came and it filled up his hermitage. And then it filled up the oceans. And then it destroyed everyone in existence on earth except for one person who had the benediction of Lord Shiva, and that was Markandeya Rishi. And then the rains continued and winds started and hurricanes started, monsoons, and there were waves and there were huge timangila fish and other huge aquatic monsters in the water, and there were whirlpools, and he was in this giant water of devastation, and he was hungry, he was ill, he was in so much pain that he thought he was going to die, but he didn't die. And the fish were terrifying him, these huge fish, and the whirlpools, and the ocean, and there was no one else alive, and there was darkness everywhere. And this went on for millions and millions and millions of years. And he was suffering in an unlimited way, and trying to naturally stay alive, and he was alive, and it was just simply suffering and the tortured and the winds and no one else, and he was sick and deathly ill for millions of years. Now, we can't quite conceive of this, but perhaps when we're in a difficult situation and thinking, how long is this going to last, dear Krishna, we could consider what Markandeya Rishi had to go through. And this went on for millions and millions and millions of years. And then at one point, and you're thinking it's never going to end, this suffering. And at one point, he saw an island. And on the northeast part of that island, there was a banyan tree. And in a leaf of the banyan tree, he saw little baby Krishna. And often we'll see this, you can see paintings of this around. And he was so beautiful and so charming looking, with his darkish complexion and his curly hair and reddish cheeks and red lips. And from the corner of this baby Krishna's eye, he glanced at Markandeya Rishi. And Markandeya Rishi practically came back to life. And and we know, what was that little baby doing? Baby Krishna doing? he had his toe in his mouth. Now, our acharyas have given an interesting comment that this hints at the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Krishna was thinking, all the devotees are so eager to taste the nectar of my lotus feet. I wonder what they taste like. That is Mahaprabhu. Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. Krishna wanting to taste the mood of what his lotus feet really taste like. And therefore, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Nothing else, no other words would come from his mind. Srimati Radharani, only thoughts of pleasing Krishna. When she was in Barsana, when she was born, she could not see. When Brishabhanu Maharaj found her, she could not see. And Brishabhanu Maharaj took her and held a birthday festival, invited everyone to attend the birthday of Radhika, little baby Radhika. And her eyes were shut closed, and little baby Krishna, looking so cute, he came to see this beautiful golden baby. And as Krishna was looking at her, her lotus eyes opened and she saw Krishna. Really, she only saw Krishna. She only wanted to see Krishna. One of the great acharyas have placed a verse, or Srila Rupa Goswami has placed a verse from one of the great acharyas in the Padyavali. And that verse says, separation from Krishna is better than being with Krishna, because when I am with Krishna, I see one Krishna. But when I'm separated from Krishna, everywhere I look, I see Krishna. Everywhere I look. And look at my consciousness. Even in front of Krishna, I don't see Krishna. And then by some fortune of good association, something comes up, my consciousness, then I turn away a little bit, and then anyway, it's back to normal material life that has such a different taste. The fragrance of material life is just so different from the sweet taste and fragrance of even a beginner's relationship with Krishna. What to speak of the relationship of the Vrijbasis with Krishna, where they don't see anything but Krishna, because that's their consciousness. We see not with our eyes, but our consciousness. Each of us individually, we see according to our consciousness. And the key in making our consciousness proper so that we can actually see Krishna is having the proper desires in our consciousness, which is what we'll eventually get to. So then, as Markandeya Rishi was coming before this baby, the little baby Krishna inhaled. And the whole universe went inside of his body, including Markandeya Rishi. And he found himself suddenly in the body of the little child, and he saw everything manifest there. The whole universe with the mountains, the rivers, the lakes, the buildings, the cow pasturing grounds, the mustard seeds. He saw his own hermitage. And he was inside the Lord's body. And then the Lord exhaled again. And there he was in the ocean of devastation again. And I thought, oh, here we go again. Now, and then suddenly, he was back in his ashram. he was suddenly back in his ashram, sitting in meditation. He sat and he went back into meditation because that's what he did. His whole existence was meditating on the Supreme Lord. He went back into his meditation and he fully took shelter after having experienced the suffering of what Maya is like. He had experienced consciously, he had asked for understanding what Maya is like, and it was such suffering that when he came out of the dream or the reality of what Maya is like, he just went back to his meditation on Lord Hari, taking full shelter of him. When he understood the actual nature of Maya, he fully took shelter of Lord Hari in his way. And he pleased Lord Shiva and Parvati, who immediately came down before him because he loved Lord Shiva so much. Lord Shiva was his guru. And he praised Lord Shiva. First, actually, he was so deep in his meditation, Lord Shiva was standing in front of him. Not like that, really, but he didn't even perceive him. And then Lord Shiva, being so powerful, he went into his heart and appeared there. And then he broke his meditation and he saw Lord Shiva in poverty there. And then he offered them seats. He praised them. He glorified them. And then Lord Shiva asked him, "I'm so pleased with you." And he glorified the Brahmins. Lord Shiva glorified the Brahmins. "I'm so pleased with you. I'll give you anything you want." And Markandeya Rishi said, "I don't want anything. I'm just happy seeing you. That's enough for me. But..." And guess what he didn't ask for this time? "But I do request one benediction from you." Now, unfortunately, it's not on the supposed to have been there, but I gave the wrong verse number. And this is what he said. "Varam ekam vrnetapi, varam ekam vrnetapi, purnat kama bhavarsanat, purnat kama bhavarsanat." He said, the one request that I have for you, nevertheless, even though I'm so satisfied seeing you, but you who, bhavarsanat, who showers the fulfillment of all desires. And here we are in Barsana that showers the fulfillment of all desires. This is what I ask for. "Bhagavati achutam bhaktim, bhagavati achutam bhaktim." I ask for bhakti to achuta, to Krishna. This is all I want. And Achyuta, the name Achyuta means what? Infallible. He doesn't fall from his promise. He is completely trustworthy because the fear that is in everyone's heart, or tends to be in every conditioned soul's heart, is if I surrender, if I give myself to Krishna, who's going to take care of me? There is fear in the heart, because all the shelters of the material world prove false. There is fear in the heart, but Krishna is a chuta who doesn't fall down from giving his devotees the protection, the shelter, the nourishment, the increase in bhakti. He takes care of them. This was the Kamutyanaya that we heard of the verse of Ajamil just chanting the name of his son and getting such an incredible result of Krishna's caring for him. And therefore, Maharaj Sachinandana is stressing, just hear one name of Hari. If you can hear that and then hear the whole mantra will come. Just one name is so powerful. Sarva Papachai, Eka Krishna Mantra Japa, Sarva Papachai. That all sinful activities, what to speak of what happened to Ajamil, is that by his continuous chanting, all his sinful activities in the past, in the present, and even eternally were destroyed. Which Prabhupada explains in his supplementary note. Eternally were enjoyed. Destroyed, and then his chanting just increased his bhakti, increased his bhakti, increased his bhakti, increased his bhakti. So he asks, so this is our Lord, that we want to develop the desire. We want to push other desires that may be there. We want to push them aside. We want to fix this in our consciousness. And he wanted bhakti to Bhagavan, to Achyuta. And not only that, tat pareshu tata toyi. I also want the association of those who are dedicated to the Lord. Tatpareshu. They are with him. This was the desire, because satam prasangam mama virya sambido, because in the association of devotees there'll be Krishna Kitta. I want devotion for the Lord, and I want to associate with devotees of the Lord. Now, going back to Maharaj Purkit and his desire. And then I will say a few words on why this pastime is presented and the brilliance of it being presented right at the very end of the Bhagavatam. And there is something so important that we are meant to learn from this. But first, I will go back to the very beginning. Maharaj Prickett had already left, but in the first chapter, when all the Brahmins had gathered around him, when he had decided to fast until death and he had 7 days left, he asked them, he said, first he praised them. He said, you're so kind to come before me. Because usually sages, they don't want anything to do with royalty, because royalty means wealth and opulence, and they fear these things. Because there's such a tendency to become enamored. Enamored means to become under the spell of these material items. Because we have this long-standing habit of seeing the material nature is not as Krishna's, but is meant for my enjoyment because of the power of Maya. So therefore, the sages avoid royalty. We saw this with Mahaprabhu. He wouldn't give Prataparudra Maharaj his darshan because I won't go near royalty. So he thanked them for coming, even though usually royalty is considered refuse, garbage. But then, he said, let the snake bird come and let it bite me. But please, please, I only desire that you continue singing the deeds of the Lord, of Lord Vishnu, Lord Hari. That's all I want. Fill my heart with this. Let the external world, let whatever happens according to my fate and my previous sinful activities or whatever, let it all happen. Svagapavaganarakishu apituyatadarshana. This is the amazing consciousness of a devotee. Let my fate come to me. But my prayer is that my consciousness always remains only focused in my loving relationship with Krishna. If I could have that, I have everything. And if I don't have that, I have nothing. And indeed, if we don't have that, we have nothing. Because everything else is, in time, turns to ashes. But then, after saying that to the sages, Maharaj Prickett asked them for a blessing. And I'll read that blessing that he asked for. Now, what did Markandeya Rishi ask for? He asked for bhakti, Bhagavan Achyuta, an association with the devotees. Now, what is Maharaj Prickett going to ask all the Brahmins for? He says, Punascha, which means he's again offers his obeisances to the Brahmins. Bhuya Bhagavad Ananti Rati. Bhagavad Ananti Rati. I want Rati. What does Rati mean? Attachment to Bhagavan, the Lord who is unlimited. I want attachment to Him. In the material world, everything is limited if we don't see its connection to the unlimited. And that was so much the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nirbanda Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Uchite. See everything, the whole world in relationship to who it is in relationship to. It's Krishna's, unlimited. But we, covered by me, I see the objects of the material world in an illusory way. So he asks for Rati, a heart's attachment to Krishna. He begs the Brahmins, anyone who came to see him, like Mahaprabhu, all the devotees who came to see him, he asked for the same thing. Where is Krishna? How can I find Krishna? And when Gadadhara Pandit said, he's in your heart, he was ripping away at his own skin. And Gadadhara Pandit, in his special way, pacified him. But that was the intensity of Mahaprabhu's search for Krishna. And Mahaprabhu is teaching us, if we want to find Krishna, there is going to have to be some intensity in our search, which springs from an intensity of desire, which springs partially from a pushing away of all those other intensities that invade the mind, born of passion and ignorance. I don't have problems generally with the things born of goodness, because I rarely see it. There must be some intensity in one's desire. So he asked for Rati, for Krishna. But that's not all he asked for. He asked for prasangas cha tarasreshu. I want sangha with those tarasreshu, with those devotees, the devotees who you are their shelter. Gotripte varanam tata. The devotees who have taken shelter of you, who have surrendered to you. That is what it means to be a devotee. I have Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadan. But that's not all he asks for. He adds one other thing to it. So the first thing, the same as Markandeya Rishi, is for bhakti to the Lord, to Lord Hari, to Lord Krishna, and association, sangha or prasanga, with the devotees who have given their hearts to Krishna. Because what is in their heart will come to my heart. But he also asks, different from Markandeya Rishi, he says, Mahatsu yam yam upayami shrishtim. Wherever I may take my birth in the material world, I want these things. And also, Maitre astu sarvatra. I want Maitre. What does Maitre mean? Friendship. Sarvatra. I want to associate deeply with the devotees, but I want friendship with a friendly mood towards every living entity, everyone. I don't want in the material world, we're also scarred in the heart by different pains that have come to us through different materialistic relationships and dealings, and that so much hinders, makes our heart hard and protective and fearful. And it so much hinders having our bhakti for Krishna because the heart is hard. Instead, when we feel affection towards everyone, of course, and this point is described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, even though we treat different souls differently according to the bodies they inhabited. And the example is given that there's a soul who's in a tiger's body and we don't embrace them, as an example. So we have to apply the philosophy practically. But kindly, a soft heart and friendly dealings to all living entities. If I'm in the material world again, I want these three things. And bless me in this way. He asked the sages, bless me in this way. And bless me in this way. I want a friendly relationship, association with the devotees, and love, rati, attachment, attraction and attachment for Krishna. Now, Sukadeva Goswami spoke that. And then Maharaj Prickett leaves, focusing fully on Krishna. And then the sages, in three chapters, right at the end of the very end of the Bhagavatam, Sutta Goswami speaks about Markandeya Rishi. Prickett Maharaj, and here's the message that I would like to tell you on these two ends of the Bhagavatam, is that Sukadev Maharaj Prickett had 7 days to live, and this is what he wanted. And Markandeya Rishi concluded, after living not for millions of years and experiencing the true face of the entirety of the material energy, and living for billions of years, 2 billion years, as I calculated it, they both came to the same conclusion. Whether you have 1 second to live, or 20 years to live, or 50 years to live, or 60 years to live, or 100,000 years to live, or 2 billion years to live, there is only one conclusion to reach that is worthwhile. And that is that bhakti is everything. Bhakti to Achyuta, to Krishna. Bhakti to Shyamasunda. Bhakti and association with everything connected to all those things that give the Lord pleasure. Meaning especially the devotees of Krishna who are Tarasreshu, who have surrendered, made Krishna everything for them, who have taken full shelter of him and asking for those blessings everywhere from all the devotees. May I have this? Please bless me. Please bless me. That was Mahaprabhu's mood. Not as this, in the mood of the Supreme Lord, his mood was, I am he, I am he, I am that one. And in the mood of a devotee, he was going to the devotees. He was folding their cloth. He was bringing mud from the Ganga so that they could bathe. He was serving the devotees. And he was saying, please bless me so I can have, where is Krishna? So I can take my next steps on my journey towards Krishna. I don't want anything but Krishna. Where is Krishna Chandra? And a soft-hearted, friendly relationship with everyone. Intimate association with devotees, Sajatiya Vaishnava Sangha. So that ends part one. Now, part two has to do with Krishna's pastimes. But again, last time, somehow or another, we spoke about Krishna in Dwarka, and here we are in Barsana, so it's a little peculiar in one sense. But if we appreciate these moods, our appreciation of Radha and Krishna, Srimati Radharani's place, because she is the one, Ladini Shakti Asmad. The pastimes of Radha and Krishna, all just different movings of Krishna and his intrinsic energy, his pleasure-giving potency, Srimati Radharani. And we are also Krishna's potency. Chetragya kya tata para. And we are also meant for Krishna's pleasure. And what gives Krishna pleasure? Well, the Brijbasis are the masters of that, because they're only servants of that, of Krishna's pleasure. And here I am just trying to become convinced that without having to experience the entirety of the material energy for millions of years and suffering and suffering and suffering and suffering and suffering and suffering. And suffering endlessly. So anyway, now we're going to explain something that's actually very painful, is when Krishna leaves Vrindavan and he enters Mathura. Now, there's not very much time, so I will go a little bit quickly on this. Well, this is such a wonderful katha, but Krishna was brought by whom? Akura. So when Akura got off the chariot, but there is a connection between part two and part one, other than it's so nice to hear about Krishna. Immediately Akura, who had seen the full opulence of the Lord, he said, like every good Hindu gentleman, please come to my house. But he wasn't a Hindu gentleman, of course. But he said, please come to my house. I beg you, I can't leave you. I've just found you. I can't let you leave me now. And Krishna said, yes, I will come to your house, but after I finish my duty of killing Kamsa. He directly said that he was going to kill Kamsa. And because Krishna was his lord, he accepted it, and Akura left very, very sadly and went into the city and told Kamsa that he had completed his mission of bringing Krishna. And Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that when Krishna spoke to Akura, he held his hand and he smiled. But Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said that inside Krishna was not smiling because he was looking at Mathura, beautiful as it was. He was just thinking about Braja, and he was missing all the resonance of Vrindavan. So then it was the afternoon, and Krishna and his boyfriends, they were, have to understand this in a particular context, that these were village boys. They had never been to a city before. Now Krishna is adopting Gramavat. He's adopting these moods because he's with his dearest beloved, and this is the very nature of this powerful Braja Bhakti, that it is so powerful. It makes Krishna's consciousness so small. Small, and of course we can't understand really what Krishna's consciousness is like, but it makes him forget his supreme position as the Lord of all and the giver of benedictions. And it places him in the mood of wanting to experience the rasa, the sweet and unlimited taste of his relationship with his devotees. And because they're in the mood of, in this case, cowherd boys, and Nanda Maharaj is there too, with some of the other elderly cowherd men. But Krishna's mood is like a cowherd boy. But he's still the Supreme Lord, and he can act as the Supreme Lord. And he does act as the Supreme Lord. So these village boys in the big city for the first time wanted to take a tour and see the sights of a big city. So they started walking through town. Look at this and look at this. And it was beautiful with its gates and the big houses, no thatched huts and but big houses and gates everywhere and opulence and golden doors and this and that and birds flying around and parks and things like this. And they were coming from the rural setting, the most beautiful and the most opulent setting of Braja. But yet they were in this mood. And then the ladies of Mathura are the first that are described as the cowherd boys walk through the city with Krishna and Balaram. And they had heard about Krishna and Balaram. How would they have heard? Because there was some meeting of the people between Mathura and Braja, sellers of this and sellers of that, and Nanda Maharaj came sometimes. And everyone in Braja only thought and talked about Krishna. So the residents of Mathura had heard about Krishna, how beautiful he was, how strong he was, how attractive he was, how beautiful his form was. So soon as they had heard that Krishna was coming, and from their point of view, that he was the prince, everyone knew that he was the prince that Kamsa was afraid of, that he was Vasudev's son. They saw him as Vasudev Krishna, as Yadottama, as the best of the Yadus. And there he was. He had come where they had heard about. And they glorified him. And they acted just, when they saw Krishna's face, they were so intoxicated by his beauty, they acted, practically speaking, just like the gopis. And then when they ran outside, they went to the roof of the houses, and they had one earring on. They were putting some kajal around their eyes, and one eye was done, and their skirts were as shawls, and one ankle belt was on their wrists. They were so eager to see Krishna that their mood was so intoxicating. And then when they saw Krishna, their hearts were stolen. But then, when Krishna smiled at them, and then when Krishna really wants to capture someone, a beautiful brother Gopi's heart, or anyone's heart, Krishna glanced at these Mathuravasi ladies out of the corner of his eye with the bow of his eyebrow. He shot the arrow of his sidelong glance, and that was it. He captured everyone in that way, and they offered prayers, saying how fortunate the gopis were, because this is their first time we've ever gotten the chance to see Krishna and the brother gopis. What pious activities, what have they done to have lived in the same village of Krishna and seeing him with that mood of mamata? Incredible. How did they gain this? How did they gain this? What blessings came to them to cause them to have that intimate, continuous, from their birth, so intimate association with Krishna? Which is so wonderful, because when Krishna was leaving Vrindavan, the gopis, in their prayers, they're saying that our fortune has ended. And now the fortune of the Mathuravasi ladies, it is just beginning, because they will have the opportunity to glance upon the beautiful moon-like face of Krishna with his lotus eyes and his darkish complexion. I remember one time when we were sitting, one of our first Govardhan retreat, perhaps, or the second, I remember Satchinanda Maharaj speaking and saying that Krishna's body is so soft that when a leaf falls from a tree, Krishna's body turns reddish from the touch of that leaf. Krishna is all attractive. Maya is all suffering. Its taste is different, but in illusion, we long for the taste of Maya. How unfortunate I am. Most unfortunate, I will say. So, after the mature ladies went mad, then Brahmins came. And this was all in Kamsa's city. And everyone was terrified of Kamsa. He was a Rakshasa. He drove all the Brahmins out. He killed people. He was the worst. He was really evil. And everyone was afraid. But in Krishna's presence, there was no fear. Their attraction for Krishna completely overcame all the fear of the ladies and the Brahmins. They came and made offerings to Krishna of everything auspicious. Sandalwood paste, lamps, argya, flower garlands. And he was coming to kill Kamsa. And everyone knew that. And then the washerman came. Now remember, Krishna's a village boy wearing village clothes. And Krishna is a good dresser. He likes to dress in such a way, Natabara, like a dramatic dancer on stage. He likes to dress away in such a way that he looks, his color coordinations, just the way he ties his yellow dhoti, chadar out of red sometimes, and the sash and his helmet. Turban off to the side and a pika. He wants to attract everyone's attention and charm everyone. And we shouldn't compete with him, because he's much better at it than us. So he was in village clothes, and he was going to go to a wrestling match. So there, one of Kamsa's servants, the washerman, came by, and he was carrying all of Kamsa's clothes, beautiful embroidered gold silk. And Krishna thought, public performance tomorrow, I should be dressed properly, not in these village clothes. This is the city. So he very, very politely asked the washerman for some clothes for he and Balaram, not even for all the boys that were, just for me and Balaram. And the washerman, being very arrogant, he began to chastise Krishna very strongly. You foolish boys, you're used to roaming in the mountains and the forest only, and you're looking at the king's fancy clothes as if they are suitable for you. And then he really made the mistake. He said the king, when he hears that you are trying to take his clothes, his men will put you in prison, they will loot everything, they will kill you. And he said, Balisha, you fool. But he didn't say you fool, he said it in plural, you fools. And Krishna was with Balaram. And he didn't like that. Because for so long I thought, now Krishna, okay, he said, no, you can't have the clothes, all right. But Krishna's reaction was quite extreme. He cut off his head. But then when I understood this point, that included Balaram when he said, you fools. And Krishna and Balaram are so close, and Krishna loves Balaram. Krishna became so intolerant, he just took his fingertips and he cut off his head without that sound. He just cut his head off. And when it describes, when Srila Sukadeva Goswami describes this, he describes Krishna as Devaki Nandana, as the son of Devaki, because at that very moment, Devaki and Vasudev were in Kamsa's prison. And this person, this washerman, was saying, I am a servant of Kamsa. And Krishna was very angry, very angry. So there's so much more that can be said, but I have to move on very quickly. So then Krishna had all the clothes, and all the other washerman's assistants ran away, and they left all the clothes there, and he and Balaram, they took what they wanted, and they gave the rest to the coward boys, and then all the rest was just left in the street. And this is in Kamsa's city, and they didn't care, and there were hundreds and thousands of people watching all this. And everyone previously was just terrified of Kamsa. And Krishna was just strolling through the city, performing his incredible pastimes and attracting everyone. Then Krishna saw a weaver. And that weaver took the opportunity to make some final adjustments on Krishna and Balaram's clothes and make a turban out of the different extra pieces, very colorful, perfectly color-coordinated for Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna was so pleased with him, he blessed him. He blessed him. He blessed him with He blessed him. That after death, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti, you will get liberation. But after death, you will get the form, spiritual form of a coward boy. He made clothes for him. But it was done with such spontaneous love in Krishna's association. That was Krishna's blessing. And so someone may think, well, that's afterlife, but that's what's going to happen next. But I want to see something now. What's the blessing of serving Krishna now? And he said, in this world, you will get supreme opulence. You will get spiritual strength. Excuse me, physical strength, influence, memory, and your senses will remain ever strong. This is what every materialistic person is looking for. Opulence, strength, influence, never growing old, one's memory not failing. And by this little act of serving Krishna, he received that. So then Krishna was wearing beautiful clothes as Balaram, strolling through the city. And he wanted something else. And gradually he goes, he gets what he wants, everything. But now he sees a mali, a garland maker. And here we're coming to the point that I want to, that we will make, that will connect us. And this mali, this garland maker, was so happy to see Krishna and Balaram. He was so happy. He gave them garlands. Just let me. I want to get this quite exactly right. So just wait one moment, please. Kindly be patient with me. You can, while you're being patient, you can pray and chant for what you really want. Just, but it'll only take a moment. The two lords went to the house of a garland maker, Sudama. His name was also Sudama. And when Sudama saw them, he at once stood up and then bowed down, placing his head to the ground. He offered them seeds. He bathed their feet. It was spontaneously coming from them, his affection for Krishna. He worshipped him and all his companions, and he gave them garlands and chandan. And then he said, my birth is completely perfect because you have come to my house. And this means that everyone, all my forefathers, all the demigods, that you have come here. Where are these blessings come from? Everyone is satisfied with me. And then he glorified them. And these glories are important to understand Krishna's opulence and position. It's only two verses. And then because Sudama is going to get a benediction. So please listen to these two verses of Krishna's power, Aishwarya. You two lords are the ultimate cause of the entire universe. It's all coming from Krishna. And there he is, a finely dressed cowherd boy in the city of Mathura at this time. And to bestow sustenance and prosperity, to maintain and give opulence upon this realm, you have descended with your plenary expansions. Because you are the well-wishing friend and supreme soul of the whole universe. You are the friend of the whole universe. You regard all, everyone, with unbiased vision. You see everyone equally. Therefore, although you reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed to all living beings. So you are the soul of everything. Savaham, samaham, savabhuteshu, namaidveshas dunapriya, ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya, mayateteshu chapyam. That you see everyone equally. You want to bestow benedictions on everyone. Every living entity, you want benedictions bestowed upon them. But you treat your devotees specially. You reciprocate with your devotees' loving worship. Here's a good point. How we lovingly worship Krishna, Krishna is going to reciprocate with us. When When Krishna walked into the wrestling arena, which will happen in chapter 43, very soon in the 10th, everyone saw Krishna differently because their consciousness is different. Their individuality is different. Their relationship with Krishna is different. Either covered by Maya or in love with Krishna. So Krishna is going to reciprocate with how we worship him. One point. But you always remain equally disposed towards all living beings. That means Krishna is like a father, wants to give to his devotees, and he wants all living entities to become devotees, but he's acting neutrally towards everyone who's not a devotee. Samoham Savabhuteshu. And then Sudama said, so please remember those points. First, you are the friend of everyone. You reciprocate with your devotees. You want to benedict everyone. You've come for that purpose, to benedict everyone. But you will reciprocate with your devotees specially. And then he says, please order me your servant to do whatever you wish. And please listen to this. This is what Sudama is saying. Because to be engaged by you in some service is certainly a great blessing for anyone. Prabhupada translated the Mahamantra, please allow me to serve you, O Lord. Not work, but service, devotional service, seva, bhakti. Please, this is what I want. I want to serve you. I am not in the center anymore. I want to serve you. Tad asrayeshu, I've taken shelter of you. I want to serve you. I want to act so you will be pleased. So he said, how can I serve you? It's my fortune that I can render service. And then he understood why Krishna was standing there. And he brought out the two most beautiful flower garlands. And he gave them to Krishna and Balaram. But secretly, he gave the most wonderful one to Krishna. They were fresh, they were fragrant, they were beautiful, they were wonderful. And Krishna and Balaram, surrounded by their friends, they were delighted by this because his mood was so sweet. Look what happened to the washerman whose mood was so disgusting, nasty, proud. So then the two lords offered the surrendered Sudama, who was bowing down before them. They said to him, whatever benediction you want, I will give you. Markandeya Rishi was presented with that two times. First time, he wanted the illusory energy. The second time, he wanted bhakti, an association with devotees. Maharaj Prickett, when asking for blessings, asked for bhakti and the association of devotees. And one other thing. What was that third thing? A friendly relationship with all, soft-hearted, friendly relationship, well-wishing for all living entities. Now, what is Sudama going to ask for? And what has this to do with the title of this presentation, which is on intention, our desire? So Sudama chose, Sopi Vavre Achalam Bhakti. Chalam means chalo, moving. Achalam, unshakable bhakti. He wanted bhakti that could not be shaken in any circumstance. No matter what allurement Maya places in front of him. And this is the only way to get that power, anchalam. One has to get blessings. Maya tarantite daivye sukunamai. Mama maya daratya. We cannot do it by our own power. So that was his first request. Does that sound familiar? And then tasmin eva kilat mani. To the Supreme Lord, I want this bhakti, to the Supreme Self, who he had just praised as being equal to everyone, but specially inclined to his devotee. Now, his second request, tad bhakteshu sasauridam, sauridam. What does that mean? Friendship, sauridam. Friendship with tad bhakteshu. With your devotees. Does that sound familiar? Same. And Maharaj Prickett asked for a friendly relationship. But here, Sudama's going to ask for something almost the same, but a little bit more. And it is Bhuteshu Cha Dayam Param. I want Bhuteshu, to all living entities, Dayam Param, to give the supreme compassion for all living entities. And here's what I would like to say in this regard. But this is not just compassion. It is translated here as Param Dayam, the supreme compassion. His prayers saw Krishna as the supreme soul, equal to everyone, but carrying on a different relationship with the souls that were his devotees. And how does Krishna relate to his devotees? According to how they love him. And here in Braja, and especially with the Braja Gopikas, their love for him is so complete and so full, in such a special mood, that he is defeated and he can't reciprocate with them. He remains forever their property. So that's the extent of how Krishna can deal with his devotees. But here, he's saying equal relationship with all living entities, and you reciprocate with the devotees. Now, what would Dayam Param mean, then? What would it mean, transcendental compassion for all living beings, then? What would that mean? Sarvabhuteshu, friendship, was what Maharaj Prickett asked for, but he's asking for compassion, the highest compassion, transcendental compassion. And we saw this in Srila Prabhupada. Because there are all the souls of this world, all the souls of this world who are just under the rules of the prison house of the material world. And Prabhupada wanted to bring them in loving relationship with Krishna in this compassionate way. And he did that by wanting to encourage people. We heard 2 days ago how powerful chanting of one Maha Mantra is. And just get people to hear Krishna's names and read about the person who is Krishna and hear about Krishna. And Prabhupada, it was so surprising, the Krishna book and Upadeshamrita, he wanted these books, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of copies printed and distributed. And people had no idea who Krishna was even. Because he had full confidence that if people actually heard with an unbiased heart the qualities, personality of Krishna, they could not help but fall in love with him. And if we can get one little part to be engaged, as Sudama said, in any service, it's such a fortune, service for Krishna. So if we can find some little service to do that for Krishna, for Srila Prabhupada, then, and then allow through service and through sadhana and through chanting and through association and through hearing and through all the processes, worshipping the deity in prayer and taking the dust of holy braj and placing it upon our heads. If we can follow these things and let them take over our service to Srila Prabhupada, then it is our great fortune. So he prayed for that. Those three things. And then the final verse that in the chapter and that we'll read now. Not only did Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, so Krishna reciprocates. Don't worry. The question, who'll take care of me if I give myself to Krishna that so much plagues my heart? Here is Krishna's reciprocation with the prayer of Sudama. He granted Sudama these benedictions, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Then Krishna and his elder brother Balaram took their leave and went on to their next pastime. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Si si Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Nityananda Prabhu ki jai. Si si Radha Govinda ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Si Barsana Dham ki jai. Jai Jai Sri Radhe. Wait. But just take a second to make your calling out an actual prayer. And since the topic of this class was intention, which was desire, which we meant prayer, let us fulfill our heart with our prayer. And let that prayer coat our calling out to C.C. Radhe Sham. And let us chant in such a way, either loudly or very, very loudly or very softly, but let the inside heart be so loud that Srimati Radharani on the hill will easily hear us. Jai!